Oh, you got water. All right. We are live here with another episode of Perfusion. Today, we've got the rising star, rising real estate star, Branton Q. Blunt. No, just Branton Blunt right here. How's it going, Branton?
Good, man. Good to see you. It's been a minute.
Yeah, you have a very fancy, all these pictures back here. What is in your background here, Brent?
Oh, we got to, the proverbial I love me wall, which you got to put somewhere. And my wife doesn't let me put them in the house, so I threw them all in the home office. But we got the Baring Group here, which is our company in real estate. But the other photos are from my past, my career. Andy and I, he won't tell you, but we went to high school together. And since that time, he's gone one direction. I've gone another. I spent 23 years in the military and in federal law enforcement. So I did a lot of stuff in executive protection. So protected various government officials over the years, all the fun suit and earpiece stuff and criminal investigations and prosecutions. But so those are some photos from the old days. I think we got, here we go. Secretary Chu, when he was the Secretary of Energy, I was on his executive protection detail. And then over here is former Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld. So
nice.
Some of the fun people I got to interact with and watch how they worked over the years.
So what are you, a Republican or are you a Democrat or you,
heading right to the down and dirty, huh? Generally pretty moderate independent. In a professional status, we protected whoever we were assigned to protect and we had a job to do so that they could do their jobs. And so that's a real kind of a lack of bias there. And then the personal side, we'll just, we'll leave out of it.
So are you still active?
Yeah, no, wrapped up and have been doing the real estate thing and, growing the multifamily real estate business over the past, 5 years and getting ready to retire from the military, after 23 years and I'm in the reserves now. So I was in the Army for 19 years and then ended up, receiving a direct commission as a Navy intelligence officer, in the reserves.
That moves so fast. 23 years.
It does, man. I was, I joined when I was 19. So, a year after we graduated or I graduated high school, you were a year behind me. Right. And,
yeah, I think so.
Joined in 99. Timing is everything in life. I graduated boot camp and military police school. And then 6 months later, 9/11 happened. So I was a junior sophomore at University of Delaware at the time. And 9/11 happened and I was already in the National Guard paying for school and off we went. So, 8 years of active duty deployments later, I was, back home and doing things. So a lot of experience, a lot of fun, experiences and, traveled a lot when I was in executive protection. You know, we were on the road 250 plus days a year around the world, which is a young man, young woman's game, but real estate, there's a lot of parallels to real estate, to tell you the truth. Spent a lot of time learning how to look through the lens of risk, risk assessment, risk mitigation. And I think that there's a huge amount of parallels to that over to assessing multifamily real estate and investments in general.
Yeah, I could see parallels to it for sure. Like risk and tolerance, right?
Right, so, yeah. And a lot of people forget that last piece is you need to be able to accurately and effectively exercise good judgment to identify risk. And then you need to mitigate risk with various functions in your operations plan. But the last piece a lot of people don't talk about, and it exists everywhere in life, obviously it's probably most talked about in areas of military or law enforcement, but it exists everywhere, which is risk tolerance, which is the ability to mitigate risk to a level, but also understand that you need to move forward and decide, can I tolerate the remaining risk? Cause you're never going to get any scenario to zero risk. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point with that is being able to then effectively tolerate the remaining risk, and in real estate, achieve the business plan on behalf of the investors.
Yeah. So I just had a risk tolerance item I had to clear up. I've been hanging on to this stock for ever, right? Mm-hmm. 2.5 years and it's embarrassing to say how much it went down. Okay. Right. It hundreds of thousands of dollars, hundreds. Okay.
It always hurts. So
my stomach hurt when it was like down a lot. So right. It went back up and I go, just today, I go, I am, my tolerance is, it's hard.
Just, you got to like ditch it. Yep. You got to ditch it.
70, a lot of money over, you know, almost multi is probably too, you know, it right. was enough. Right. So my tolerance, it hurt. Right. That was my risk tolerance. Was I willing to lose it all? Yeah, at one point, but I was just, you know, you also can only hang on to a loser, you know, yeah, losing, you know,
not every investment we've had some real estate investments go that way. And part of being a good owner operator and being a fiduciary of your investors' capital is knowing when the outlook has changed. Knowing, look, we're not gonna go down. This is not the hill we're gonna die on, you know. There's return on investment, but then there's the fundamental return of investment, and that's a very big threshold you're gonna cross if you're not gonna be able to actually return your investors' money to them, not just what their gains are, right, their profit, but their actual money, and really being able to be flexible, having a plan. But also understanding that throughout the hold period of a property or whatever the life cycle is of an asset, to be able to adapt and be flexible and say, you know, we need to pivot here. We need to speed up renovations, slow down renovations, maintain liquidity through this tough time, which might mean getting a little bit less in rent, hurting the NOI, but keeping more cash on hand and not deploying it as quickly. It might mean refinancing or not, or selling or not, you know, and just understanding and being communicative with your investors and being transparent about what data you're using to make your decisions.
So you're a federal agent for, I'm like 15.
Yeah, in the Army and then plus on the federal civilian side, but yeah, 15
plus years.
So then
when did you get into acquiring apartments? You're acquiring apartments.
Yeah, started with a couple single family home type stuff, and mm-hmm. as many do, and realized, you know, I can't scale this as quickly as I'd like to, and it's also tough to leverage certain things like professional property management companies, you know, things like that, different types of debt products. So we transitioned into multifamily around 2018, and that's when we're really big, given our backgrounds, we're really big on credibility, right? Every, you know, when I was in law enforcement, back when I was a uniform cop, it was like, you know, everybody has something to tell you. Everyone's got a story, but how credible are they, you know? And we wanted to be credible. So we did our first property 2018-ish. It was a 16 unit. We bought it with our own cash. We worked out
like
the
we
case.
Is you and your wife or
no,
you
sorry.
Partner?
My partner, Felix, and I, who's in the same line of same background as me, military, mm-hmm. federal law enforcement. And, we bought a 16.
How much
unit.
Was that 16 unit? How much
we
was
bought
it?
Let's see, 272,000 in North Texas.
So, like, yeah. Were there walls?
Yeah. There were walls. There were not very many paying tenants. We screwed up our vetting process. We didn't do very good due diligence.
So $272,000 for 16 units.
Yep. And, you know, the rude awakening of, trusting things like rent rolls and financials without doing, which we knew better, right? Because of our backgrounds, we tear apart fraudulent businesses for a living to prosecute them. So we know the process, but then you go into a new realm like real estate and you know, you can still make your rookie mistakes. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we wanted to work out the kinks with our own money before we raised anybody else's into a deal. So we used all of our own cash. We bought for 272.5. We undershot the CapEx dramatically. The seller.
So
was
explain to the audience, what is CapEx?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. A capital expenditure.
No, that's a high level word.
Yeah, absolutely. Capital expenditures is your renovation budget. It's pure and simple. So, it's the money, the budget you're going to use, your estimated budget to improve the property as needed to be able to rent a lease up or hit certain rents and ultimately stabilize the property. And a property is just a business in a box, right? It's got income over expenses, the difference of which is your net operating income, just like any other business in any other field. So we bought it for $272,000 and we put $145,000 into it. We emptied it down to one tenant. we did not predict that we had not planned on doing that, but we got in there and realized that half the tenants on the rent roll, the listed tenants, didn't actually pay rent or weren't the right people that were living there. You know, live and learn, right? So
you get a rent roll, but do you actually like vet the bank statements, like the deposits?
We do now.
Now. Okay. Gotcha.
So yeah, no, that's a mistake you only make once.
It's a trust, but of earnings.
Yes. Trust, but verify, right? Trust, but verify. Yeah. So you look at their financials.
Do you hire an accounting team?
If it's a small property, it's not that hard, right? Asking for the right things during due diligence period, the inspection period under contract, to get the right things from the seller is key.
So do you ask for bank statements?
Oh, absolutely. We want minimum 24 months.
Okay.
And we want monthly bank statements from their operational accounts. And then we're going to verify that the estimated gross collections from the rent roll are close to or match what they're actually depositing into the bank from rent collections. So that's key, that the reported dollars are the actual dollars. And then expenses were usually less concerned.
Have you ever seen anybody like any like made up paperwork or any
on that first deal? Yeah.
Well, you did.
There was probably a legal case to be had, but we were, you know, it was a small property. It was, we could handle it. We fixed it, in quick order.
Yeah.
But there, you know, they provided us a rent roll and about 60% of the names on there didn't even live there. They weren't the people that were living there. So that's a kind of a blatant falsification, but their argument we knew would be, well, we didn't know because they're a terrible management company. They're a terrible owner, you know? So we fixed it, but now we do. And we also, part of our due diligence, we have a professional property management company that's going to ultimately, if we buy the deal, manage it. They go in and they do a lease audit and they're going to check all of the tenant record files. They're going to go over each and every lease to make sure the names match that who's really living there. They make sure that the rent correlates, any additional fees, start date of the lease, end date of the lease, make sure that all of the records are in place because we need to be able to count on that. It's a contract with a human being and we need to be able to hold them to that. So, because if none of the leases have, let's just say, security deposit clauses, good luck enforcing that. It's not in writing. So you really do have to be meticulous on the front end, but that makes your life a lot easier the day you start owning the property.
So You started off with 60. You still own the 16 units today?
We sold it a year ago. We owned it for 3-4 years. But we bought it for 272. We put 150 into it, took it down to one tenant, leased it back up, managed it remotely. We put our systems in place because we weren't living in Texas. We self-managed it. We really wanted to learn the business end to end, inside and out, as part of that credibility piece. So we managed contractors remotely. We had a 1099 property manager that worked for us. And at month 10, we stabilized it. We took it to a local bank and we did a cash out refinance. And
so how much did you cash out?
$445,000. So purchase plus. What did they appraise it at? Yeah, they appraised it at $595,000. So we more than doubled the property value.
You took out that much. That's a lot. Yeah. Okay.
So we did a 75% takeout and we broke even in that we had no money in the deal at refi. So we pulled out 100% of our money and then we held it for an additional 2 years and then sold it for $700,000.
Okay. And you had $400 into it? What'd you have into it again? 272 plus the one.
Yeah, 272. We were all in at like 445, which is almost the exact number we cashed out with a 75% takeout.
So it was a netted gain of 245.
Right. Exactly.
Over three, four years.
Yeah, three and a half, four years.
And how much cash flow was it generating you during that time?
Oh, I'm trying to remember.
I'm just trying to, magnify one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we were making a couple $1,000 a month. It was relatively low.
Each of you, or total?
No, off the property. Cash flows available for distribution.
$2,000.
Yeah, something like that.
But you and your partner, or just you?
Total. Total.
Okay.
It
total.
Was,
okay.
Yeah. But it was,
I mean, that's, you know, not, no, that's not that like that. I mean,
no one's leaving their job over that. Right. I mean, no one's walking away.
It's definitely a single, you know, maybe a double. I'd probably say a single.
No, it is. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. But it's one of those things where you have to get started somewhere. You have to take you have to take your licks, work out the kinks, you know, get your lessons learned. We wanted to do it with our own money before we did it with other people's money. And then we organically scaled. We did a
Wait. What is that worth today?
Probably it's a smaller market. I mean, today, since the treasury rate and everything else has gone crazy over the past year, probably about the same, but at its height, it was probably worth this? North Texas, Wichita Falls.
Okay. You love investing in Texas. Is that where all your units are?
Yeah, I don't love investing in Texas. Okay. Texas is, you can't ignore the economic drivers of the state from an investment perspective. It's got a very strong economy, a lot of growth in multiple markets statewide. There is taxation down there. Property taxation is pretty predatory. And insurance, at least in the south of Texas, down near the Gulf, has really gone haywire this year. We're talking 100-120% increases in insurance rates, which can very quickly destroy the value of your property.
Yeah,
can,
same with Florida. There was so much fraud going on. You know, for years I heard about, you want a new roof? Just call a roofer and tell them you're missing a shingle and then you get a free roof. And I was like, I got enough money. I just bought a roof. I was like, it's like $15,000. Right. It's like, I don't even fucking do that. But I don't need to do that. I'm like, it's not enough money to like risk it. And I was like,
they always want to involve claims adjusters. And then when you go to sell it, you got this. Yeah. Everybody was doing it.
Has done this. Now my policy from 2017 was $700-800. I just got my newest one. It's $4,000 now.
Right.
For my house.
So we own several assets in Corpus Christi. Great market. Very strong. Overnight, literally April 1st, we went from, now it's incrementally climbed over the past 3-4 years. We were at an average of about $600 to $700 a unit. So if it's a 47 unit, multiply by $600 to $700, that was the annual policy amount premium. It's gone up $700-900. We're at $900 a unit on 142 unit that we own down in Corpus Christi. And overnight, it went to $1,680 a door.
That can wipe out
2 years of value at work.
$140,000 in insurance costs.
Yeah, and the big thing about that
plus the new number.
Right, and the big thing about that is it's not just about insurance companies just raising their rates because of storms like Hurricane Ian. What it was a combination of is a lot of these policies on the commercial side are layered. So there's multiple back-end providers that are stacked into that to reduce each one of their risk, right? Mm. So if it's a $2 million policy, and I'm not an insurance guy, but this is how it's been explained to me, is that there might be 3, 4, 5 providers in there, each with certain exposure. Well, it wasn't just about the cost of due to storms. It's that it's a supply and demand problem. In a lot of these Gulf states, Texas, Florida, Louisiana, half of those back-end providers just pulled out. They no longer provide policies in the state. So now there's a supply problem, and everyone that's left has a much higher exposure on their policies. So the cost goes up.
So you started in 2018, 16 units. You started with a couple single family homes. It sounded like, would you flip those? Did you rent them out?
Yeah, I flipped them, turned them, you know, BRRRR, the buy, renovate.
You like that method. You buy, renovate, and then you cash out.
It's ideal. In the multifamily space, there are times in the market cycles where you can do it. And if you hit it right, you can find something that, you know, you can buy at 60 cents on the stabilized dollar and renovate it for 2 years and then go and refinance it just like we did and pull out all the money, return the money to investors, and then hold it.
So you've grown that 16 unit to how many units are
you at now? We organically grew. We did a 47 unit, a 40 unit, 142 unit, 272 unit. We're under contract. You know, we're contracted on a 149 unit right now. So we're getting up towards 1,000 doors under management. And then we always, you know, this is a team sport. So
yeah.
a particular deal in a particular market in a particular state, you have to arrange the pieces to get that deal done. And so we'll bring in, we have partners that we're that we've worked with, that we trust, that we like to work with, and we'll plug and play and build a team around the needs of a deal.
Yeah. So you've gone from 16 doors to 1,000. And then, I mean, I guess it's paying. I don't know. You've got
partners getting there. In there. No, it's getting there. And a lot of the things that people don't talk about.
Like how many doors do you want to get to? Is that
it's less about the doors. It's the quality of the doors. I mean, anybody can go out and and raise a bunch of millions of dollars and go put someone else's money into a deal, take their fees, and maybe, you know, who knows how they underwrote, who knows, you know, if the wind changes, if all of a sudden they're underwater, how much contingency budgets did they have in place? How good was their underwriting really is what it comes down to, and their analysis, fancy word for analysis. And, you see a lot of people right now going belly up because they underwrote with very, very, very tight margins. They got debt at 3.5% 2 years ago. And they're like, oh, in 2 years, we're going to do a refinance and it's going to be 3.5%. And we're going to pull out all this money, and all the returns to their investors were based off of this at best estimated guess on being able to go get a new loan. And now they have to pay off their old loan. It's maturing, bridge debt or whatever it is. And rates are not 3.5%. They're 6.5%.
Right.
And as a result, they're completely underwater. They may even have to bring money to the table to pay off their old loan. And so I think what you get there is, you know, there's a lot of education programs out there where you fork over thousands of dollars. Everybody teaches you how to find deals, and all of a sudden you're qualified. And
so where can people connect with you, Brent?
Yeah. We're one of those things where we're workaholics. And then we're like, someone was like, you don't have a website. I was like, yeah, we should probably get a website. So that's under development. But you can definitely connect on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn, and you can find me, and then we have a website under development and always available by email.
Do you have Instagram?
I do.
Do you?
You know, it's one of those things.
Yeah. So that's not you like LinkedIn.
I have Instagram, but it like sucks you in. And you're spending
open,
too much
you're open on, you, you're open to taking on outside money, right? You're looking for investors.
Yeah. We go find deals. We put the pieces in place. We conservatively analyze the deal, and then we're going to put together an offering, and we'll take it to friends, family, equity partners. And we may raise anywhere from $1 to $7 million is the highest one we've done. And then we're going to put that money into play, and it's all regulated by the SEC. We have SEC attorneys and CPAs and all that kind of stuff. So we're all by the book here. So we pull together other people's capital that are looking for good investments in their portfolio. And the beauty about the real estate piece is, you know, you're not flipping a business, right? You're not making some 3-4x equity multiple in real estate. You're going to hold on. You're going to be invested for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, but you're getting a lot of tax benefits along with that. So, you know, we do cost segregation studies, which allows us to take a bunch of depreciation under the IRS law and push that to investors. So a lot of that comes in the first year or two of a hold. And the power of that is really why people say real estate's so powerful, is because you may get 40% depreciation. So for every dollar you put in, you're not paying taxes on 40 cents of it. You know what I mean?
To me, you need to talk so slow because I don't, it's like so foreign, but who knows what they're doing and they're listening to you, they're like,
and if they're talking
all these like words, I have to like look them up.
Well, that's tax, right? Like, you know, if you profit a dollar from an investment, you have to, that's a gain. And the IRS says you have to pay whatever tax basis on that dollar. And the power of real estate is that that you get the power of what's called depreciation. And that is the IRS accommodating owners saying it depreciates. Your property physically falls apart over time. And we're going to allow you to write off that on a schedule. And we get to pass that on to investors. So even though they're just passive investors, they get the benefits. So you may get 40 cents of a tax write-off for every dollar you're in the deal. And now all of a sudden that adds up because it goes onto your tax return and you've got this credit with the IRS. And that's where the old, you know, Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it's less about what you make and more about what you keep. And that's where real estate is so powerful. You get a lot of high wage earners, doctors, lawyers, things like that, that all their money is active earned income. They're getting slammed in taxes, but they take their post-tax dollars and they invest it into real estate. And because of the tax benefits, their take home starts to outpace their regular W-2 job.
Invest in real estate, folks.
Yeah, right?
Do they get that depreciation if they invest in you?
Well, you're investing with me by trusting me with your money. You're investing.
And then do they get the depreciation as well?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Do they? Okay.
Absolutely. So the money, it's based off capital contribution in the deal. That's how depreciation gets distributed and allocated.
All right, Brenton, let's check in with you in a year on this.
And, yeah, man.
We'll see if you got to, I don't know, quality, more quality, 1500 quality.
Well, no, if you're looking for abundance in life, you know, we were joking about this. You know, you and I grew up in a relatively affluent part of the country, and different people come by way of that in different ways. But in my background, one of the things that I'm really big on abundance in and I'm seeking is time. You know, being in the military, being in the federal government, they put zero value on your time. Zero.
Yeah, but if you're not working, what are you going to do? You know what I mean?
Well, it's not not working. It's not working. Yeah. It's more about having the flexibility of owning your own time. I'm going to work really hard. True. I'm going to get things done, and then I'm going to go spend time with my kids or my wife. Right. Versus sitting in a cubicle pretending like you're working half the day.
So you're saying that invest in real estate and you get back your time. You buy back your time, basically.
Eventually, yeah. That's really what you get to do is start to put have streams of income that aren't hour for hour for time you have to go work for it. It starts
right, where you don't have to work.
Exactly. To work for eventually,
it,
right?
You work for it for a little bit, and then it gets figured out.
You're a workaholic. I'm a workaholic. But it can become passive or residual. So the work you're doing on the front end pays you for many years to come.
I don't work that hard. I like to think I work smart.
Well, yeah. And that's the beauty of having, you know, working in your own business. Yes, you don't have the safety security net of a paycheck coming in every 2 weeks, true. Right? Yeah. But the trade-off is you are only limited by your own efficiency and work ethic versus some sort of bureaucratic environment like I grew up in, which is it doesn't matter how hard you work. You're not getting promoted, based off that. And you're not getting, you know, you're not really going to get any extra time off. So it really just comes down to, that's why you have those kind of those, you know, clock punchers.
Control your time. All right.
Yeah.
Let's wrap it up. Thank you, man. Brenton. Hit Brenton up on LinkedIn here, 'cause that's his mode of transportation. And
great to see you, man.
Looking forward to having you back on.
All right. We'll talk soon.